Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on March 24th, 2017. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a really beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
Oh, Joe, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful morning.
It is. Wow. I thought, you know, Saturday was going to be rainy, but it's not really going to be that rainy. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, I just saw the news, and they said light morning showers. So hopefully we can get the rain out of the way early and enjoy the rest of a beautiful day, although it says cloudy Saturday and Sunday, so we'll see, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm always, you know, I'm always thinking, is the farmer's market going to be rained out or is it going to be a low turnout? And we got canceled on Wednesday, last Wednesday, because the winds in Hermosa were just fierce.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this Saturday, coming Saturday in Playa Vista, it'll be wonderful. People will come out and enjoy buying their greens and eating their fruits and being healthy.
So the weather really does make a difference in turnout for a farmer's market. It really does affect it. It's interesting because I remember years ago when we had Paul Hennessy on the show as a guest. And we talked about the restaurant business, and you asked him a question. He said, the biggest factor is weather. You know, he said, when it's beautiful out, you know, we do well. He said, rainy, cold, windy, he said, a lot less well. But it was something I guess I never thought about before, you know, weather affecting how a restaurant does on those days. Speaking of restaurants, I went over to the ribbon cutting for Primo Italia yesterday, you know, our friend Lou Giovanetti. It's the same location as the previous Lou. It was Lou's on the Hills, and there was some ownership change and stuff, and so Lou is back, and the restaurant looks great. They made some minor changes, to the interior. They have a new chef. And so I went over there yesterday, and, you know, the whole Torrance City Council and Mayor Fury, everybody was out for the event, the chamber staff and, fans and friends and local media and, Torrance City Cable was out there. So he treated us to some light bites and sips and actually gave us a tour of the restaurant. He wanted to put forth family, you know, his and his wife's family. They're from Italy. They're from Sicily. And he took us all through the restaurant, and he has a lot of family relics on display that, you know, they brought into the restaurant. He has a big statue of Saint Rocco, and a lot of family photographs on the wall, and you know, other things from Italy. And he gave us the story behind them. Is, you know, he's such a congenial guy. You know, he's just a real personality,
right,
and a lot of fun. And so yeah, so Luz's Primo Italia has been open for a bit now, but they just had the official grand opening and ribbon cutting yesterday. So everybody get over there and eat. The food is delicious.
The food is delicious, but it's always the, you know, one of the things that's most impressive about Primo Italia is that I was there. I had the privilege of seeing the pre-opening pep talk every day that they're open. They have a meeting 2 minutes before they open. And it is not only a pep talk by Lou, but it is a kind of a marching orders, you know, kind of a let's give the client the best experience possible today as a team, And that was so impressive. And Michelangelo Aliaga, Chef Aliaga, is just unreal. He is so good. I'm going to get emotional. They are so good. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, Joe, that's a great segue, you know, talking about giving the client the best experience possible.
Yeah, I love good customer service. Jackie, do we have someone that maybe gives great customer service and is recognized for that?
Of course we do, Joe.
Okay, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Michelle Brown, a South Bay resident and real estate professional and a regular contributor to this podcast. Michelle is the executive director for the real estate professionals team at Keller Williams South Bay. Her team has been honored as top producers with gold and platinum medals for 5 years running. Michelle was awarded the prestigious Realtor of the Year by the South Bay Association of Realtors. The organization, with more than 4,000 members, honored her as a respected member of the community, where she has made a mark on the international Los Angeles and South Bay landscape with an outstanding record of exemplary character and achievement. Michelle is also an experienced keynote and motivational speaker, utilizing her experience in forming and maintaining the longevity of teams. Her sold-out team-building sessions for both companies and local associations are renowned. Michelle is a member of the California Association of Realtors, the National Association of Realtors, and the California Apartment Association. She has served for 6 years on the Keller Williams International Leadership Council and is the recipient of numerous industry awards, including the Keller Williams Cultural Icon Award. She specializes in selling luxury properties with as little disruption as possible to the homeowner's daily routine and with an emphasis on client confidentiality. Michelle's luxury and commercial real estate teams are located in Los Angeles, Dallas, Nashville, and most recently, well, not most recently, she has an office in Orange County. She also has an office located in Riviera Village and a new office in The Point in El Segundo. And this morning, we're going to hear a little bit about the new office. We're going to hear about the hot, hot, hot local real estate market and anything else that is, you know, she comes to tell us. She always comes with stuff to tell us. So welcome back to the program, Michelle. We're so glad you could join us this morning. Again.
Hi, Jackie, Joe. Good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Very,
great,
very
great.
Good. And, you know, we talk about the real estate market here in the South Bay, you know, like people talk about the weather in other places in the country. I mean, you know, we in Chicago, or Jackie's from New York, I mean, the weather is more interesting because it's changing on a daily basis. Here in Southern California, people talk about the real estate market. And it doesn't matter whether you're a renter or you're an owner or you're in the market to buy or you're in the market to sell. Real estate is kind of exciting. But, Michelle, we haven't seen crazy stuff like this since, I'm thinking, 2006, before the crash. I'm telling you, my neighbor, Michelle, is a broker and agent, and he was talking to a client. I overheard 13 offers in under 48 hours. What's going on?
There is a frenzy, absolutely, and it's very apparent everywhere you look and to everyone you talk to. And you're right, it is the topic of conversation in any restaurant, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or standing in line at Smart and Final, anywhere you go. And it's pretty incredible to us too, because as healthy as we know that our real estate market is, it wasn't anything that we anticipated to still be this strong at this point. And we're coming into spring and summer. Activity always picks up in the spring and summer, but not to the extent that you're talking about, Joe. We actually had hit a point the last quarter of last year where things were a little bit slow, although prices were still stable and even increasing in some pockets. The activity, the transactions, the closings of escrows were down from, you know, what they normally are for the last quarter of previous years. So we assumed that it would probably stay that way through the first quarter of this year, but it's gone on fire, as you just said. A lot of the activity that we see right now is what we refer to in our office as the builders are back, right? Because in as you said, in 06, 07, 08, we had builders calling every day, asking us if we were about to bring a home on the market that might be a teardown and that might be suitable for a major renovation or a flip every day, right? And for the years before that, we spent every day calling them, letting them know that we had something coming to market. And then all of a sudden, there's a shift, and they start calling us. And, you know, it's in our client's best interest always to bring a house to the market first, so that as many buyers as possible have an opportunity to see it and make an offer on the property. But occasionally, that's not what a seller wants. You know, occasionally it's an elderly person or a family that's being relocated and they're in a hurry and they have equity and they just want to make a quick sale. But you leave a little bit of money on the table, I think, when you do that. We work with a lot of trust organizations and trust officers that work for banks who manage trust for families and partnerships. And when we list properties for them for sale, their requirement is that it stay on the, you know, that they not even review offers. And we have to post that in the multiple listing service that the sellers, the trust that is selling, won't even look at offers for 2 weeks to make sure that it saturates. That's their calculation, their formula. They know it takes that long to get it out to market. But with the builders being back here now, you know, again, after the 06, 08, then you get to be 2010, 2011, 2012, and we had a really happy relationship with them because the market was good, it was strong, it was healthy, and it was balanced, and it was neither really a seller's or a buyer's market. It was just a good, healthy, well-balanced real estate market. And then we were calling our builders, letting them know when we were bringing something to market, and they weren't returning our calls anymore. And when they did call us, it was because they needed to liquidate some inventory because they purchased properties, they purchased rental properties or teardowns, and then they allow the seller or the renter to stay there for 6 or 9 months while they get their plans approved and figure out when they're going to start construction and everything. And they were buying up a lot of the assets in the South Bay, so. And they were building and tearing down, but they still had an inventory on the right side of their desk of homes that were still rentals that were waiting to be redeveloped. And then and then that's when, as you said, the crash came. So then the builders are calling us again, trying to liquidate those assets because, you know, they're over leveraged and they needed to get rid of some of those properties. And then we didn't hear from them for a couple of years, and now they're out there with us. They're out there talking to homeowners and trying to buy houses and calling us every day. And there is still a shortage of inventory. There are still multiple offers. The 13 offers that you talked about, we see that when a home is really, really well priced and the lot size is right to develop or to do two on a lot. But right now, typically, we're seeing still 3 and 4 offers. And as I said, 9 or 13, if the property is priced right, the owner's motivated to sell, and it meets all the requirements of a developer.
So let's talk about the different audiences out there? Because, you know, of course, when we talk about a market like this, the sellers, those that have been in their homes for a while, they've maybe their kids have grown up and left home. They're ready to either downsize or to move, or they're just going to sell a home and buy a different home, or an apartment or something like that. Those people, this we've just talked to them about what's happening in their market. What about the people that are buying? What would you say to buyers in this market now?
When we talk to our buyers every day, we tell them that, you know, they're not going to find a deal. Everybody wants a deal, and they, you know, they want to get the best deal that they can and the best home at the best price that they can, and that's our job to find that for them. But we really analyze all the properties very closely and make sure that they're not overpriced and see what, you know, the comps are for the neighborhood and make sure that our buyers are not overpaying for a property. But in some cases, if they really want the home, if that's really the neighborhood that they want, the school district that they want, the view that they want, they may have to pay a little bit more for it than what it's listed at or what its current value might be appraised at, knowing that if they live there another 5 or 10 years, they'll have equity. It's not that big of a deal, right, if it's overpriced by a little bit. But there are homes that are sitting on the market now even for 60 or 90 days because the seller has an unrealistic expectation of the value of their home. So we will go in and help make offers on those with our buyers at what we think is the market value on the home so that they're not overpaying for it. But to come in under what the list price is or what the seller's expectation is of the value of their home, you're going to be competing against multiple offers. And still, I just had lunch with one of our escrow officers yesterday, and she was telling me that half of the transactions that are coming through the files in her office are still cash, with a lot of it foreign money, and there's still cash offers. So if you have a home that's listed for sale for $1 million and you have multiple offers around $990,000 to $1,001,000, and the seller accepts the $1,001,000 and then the home appraises for $950,000, then the buyer will typically ask the seller to come down to that price, and the seller says, no, I have multiple offers, so you need to come up to my price. And then the buyer gets to decide if they want the property badly enough to do that or not. And then if they're getting a loan, they have to have substantial down payment because the lender's going to approve, you know, according to the appraised value. And if they have enough down, then that won't get in the way. But if you have cash, then the appraisal contingency doesn't become an issue at all.
Michelle, let me ask you about, it's interesting what you said about how sellers, what they think their property value is worth. You know, there are all these things online now. One that comes to mind is Zillow, where you can go online and see the, you know, supposedly the value of your home. How correct is that? I mean, what? Tell us about that. How does that
Well, work? Even thanks, Jackie, for bringing that up. Even those websites, and I won't name names, but thank you for doing so. But even those websites will tell you if you read far and long enough on their site, and a lot of consumers use them. And we get a lot of referrals from our advertising on Zillow. So it has its positive aspects. What the failure is that they use an average value map. They use a system that calculates what has recently sold in the neighborhood, and it's a machine. It doesn't know the neighborhoods. It doesn't know the idiosyncrasies of each niche, and it hasn't seen the home to know what the upgrades are. So I'll give you the perfect example of when I met my current husband 14 years ago, and he was living in a two-bedroom in South Redondo Beach, and it was a post-war bungalow, but it's on a 7,000 square foot lot, and as are a lot of homes, you know, in South Redondo in those cul-de-sacs that are the Sepulveda girls, Maria, Juanita, Irina, those streets. So the he kept telling me that his home is a $1 million home, and I'm looking, and this is an intelligent man. He builds hospitals, right? And I said, No, not really. You have a 7,000 square foot lot that has a land value of about 800,000, and this was 14 years ago. And he said, no, I saw, look online, it's worth $1 million. Well, the two homes on either side of him had been sold, torn down, and because of the size of the lot, there were two detached townhomes put on each of those lots, and each of those homes sold for $1 million, $1.1 million. So there's four sales on properties that were adjunct to his that valued the homes in that neighborhood at being $1 million to $1.1 million. And he's in an 800 square foot, two bedroom, one bath post-war bungalow that truly the land value on it at that point in time would have maybe been 800, probably 750. So, and as I started to say, if you look deeply enough into the website, they will tell you that their average value on properties is accurate. They have a 40% accuracy 60% of the time or something like that. I don't remember exactly. Yeah, but it's there. It's published right there. So, and it's, and I think in an earlier conversation when I was speaking with you and Joe, with the For Sale by Owner website, the gentleman in Seattle who owns For Sale by Owner sold his home with a realtor to, you know, make sure that they were getting the best service that they could and accurate, you know, comps and everything on the sale of his property. So what does that tell you?
Okay. Now, you said something earlier, Michelle, that, you know, a lot of people just don't get. And that's not that. You know, obviously this is a wonderful place to live and it's a wonderful place to raise children. We raised our children here and it's the South Bay, but you can't build a wall high enough to keep out that foreign money. So let's talk about the cash that's pouring into the South Bay, but I think some percentage of it is people that want to live here, but it's more investment. Let's talk about that.
You're right, it is. And you know, the good news is that we have a healthy economy, we have a great neighborhood to live in, we have all of those wonderful things we always talk about. And the caveat to that is that the cash buyers typically are entry level or very high end. So if someone's buying a home that's $2, $3, $4, $5 million, we have a lot of cash buyers in that category that is local money or is not foreign national money, and then we do have money from other countries coming in. So there are cash buyers in that level of affluent homes, and then there are entry-level buyers who it may be first-time home buyers, and they want to buy something, or even retired who are downsizing, and their price point is $400,000 to $600,000, and they probably are looking at a condominium or a townhome somewhere, and they are competing with the investors who are buying, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 condos in one community so that they have rentals there. And we have a client right now who live in Turkey and have a good deal of money to invest, and they're looking for apartment buildings to buy that are less than 20 units. And their criteria for that is that they want to convert them to condos. And we haven't seen condo conversions in the South Bay since probably, I hate to admit that I've been here that long, but really in probably the 80s or 90s, condo conversions were very hot. But their intent is to, they have all 18 units sold if they can just find the property and then do the conversion, because they're selling it to their friends and families who live in Turkey who have children who are in college here. And they visit here 3 or 4 times a year, sometimes for 3 to 4 weeks at a time, and they want to be near resort or entertainment districts, and they will manage those properties for their friends as a timeshare, but then they have their money invested in the United States, or they have a condo for their student to live in while they're in college here. So there's all kinds of money from all kinds of different walks of life and different countries and different reasons for buying. So that's where the Jackie used the word frenzy. That's where the frenzy comes in, because you're competing with a lot of different kinds of buyers that have a lot of different strengths. And a first-time home buyer sometimes just doesn't have that kind of elasticity in their income or that kind of elasticity in what they're approved for a loan, and they've taken every penny they have to try to buy something in, and then they get, you know, beat out by someone who's going to use it as a rental property. So that's heartbreaking when you're working with that buyer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking. But, you know, I am very familiar mostly with the North Redondo right now. I've been living here for quite a while, and I've seen quite an uptick here in North Redondo, specifically because of the Jewish Community Center. Lots of Orthodox Jews want to be able to walk to synagogue on Shabbat, which is Friday night to Saturday night. And you'll see a lot of people in our neighborhood walking to synagogue. And that puts a special, like, dome of interest right around here in the North Redondo, and you've seen that trend, right?
We do. We have seen that trend, and we actually see it in a lot of places where families or professionals without families and single people and retired people, they're trying to get into a niche neighborhood like that, like the Fairfax District or like the 3rd Street area, but they're trying to get out of the city and out of the traffic, but they need a walkable neighborhood. That's why the surge in luxury appliances like Gaggenau appliances that have a Sabbath setting on them, that's very important to lifestyle. And we're seeing a surgence of that in our niche neighborhoods, because people want out of the city. They want little more peaceful lifestyle and to get out of the traffic, and they don't mind the commute to work. So it's an interesting kind of change that's going on. We had an open house in Holly Glen area of Hawthorne a couple of months ago, and we were having 40 or 50 people through during open houses on weekends. And I was there one weekend visiting with my crew, and probably a third of the people that came through were from Culver City, Mar Vista, Playa area.
So I found that
to be very, very interesting. And one was a family who was retiring and moving back here from Hawaii and wanted to be closer to their children and grandchildren. And others were middle-aged with children that wanted that school system, and others were first-time homebuyers. So it's really fun, and we really meet some very, very interesting people, and everyone has a different motivation for why they're buying. And it's a good time.
Right. Wow. Okay, so we're talking about a lot of great stuff going on in the real estate market. Let's talk about interest rates. I mean, you know, a lot of people in the public consciousness think it's all determined by interest rates. The interest rates go up, the market goes down. The interest rates go down, the market goes up. But in this case, we have, I think, not the Fed specifically, but we have several actors, the president and several other actors in the financial community on record as saying that they believe the Fed is going to hike interest rates not once, not twice, but maybe three times this year. Tell us a little bit about that and how you feel that factors into people saying, well, we better buy now.
Well, it does factor in, and it is a big deal, and I think that's what is causing some of the frenzy right now, because, you know, we have seen interest rates increase. We have been told that they're going to, and my perspective, it's interesting with the 15 agents that I work with on my team, and some of them are new to the business, and they're just freaking out about it. However, it is spurring some of the buyers who were on the fence to buy now, because obviously they're buying less home. because they're qualified for a certain amount of monthly payment, and the interest rates figured into that, and then in areas where you have the HOA fees calculated into that, now, you know, where they were qualified for a $700,000 or $800,000 home, they're not anymore. So they're out there trying to get the best value that they can before the interest rates go up again. And it's funny to me because when I bought my first home, and I won't tell you when that was, interest rates were 17%, right? So I'm like,
right.
But the new kids, you know, the agents that we're working with on our team are just freaking out because they've never seen interest rates above 4%. In the time that they've been in.
I remember those 17% interest rates.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, Jackie.
We have President Carter to thank for that. I remember that in the late 70s. That was nutty.
Yeah.
Right. Now, just do some raw calculations for us, Michelle, so that people understand what we're talking about here. There was a point in the 70s, as you said, 17% interest rate. But let's just talk simple numbers. 5% versus 15%. What's the difference in a payment on a $100,000 home when you've got a 5% interest rate versus a 15% interest rate?
Well, it's going to be $10,000 or $15,000 more on the value of the home, right, that the lenders are calculating. And then the defining number is actually on what they're qualified to buy, because it's a big formula, because it depends on what their credit score is and how much down they have and all of that stuff. But it could increase their house payment substantially, so that they're, as I said, they're no longer qualified. I don't have a calculator in front of me, Joe, so I don't. I can't calculate it for you exactly, but it could. And I'll tell you what's happening. One interesting thing about that is that we are now starting to see some notices of default, which will lead to REOs. We're trying to reach homeowners right now who have notices of default on their properties, because we haven't seen that in probably 4 or 5 years since the big REO foreclosure thing. REO being real estate that's owned by the bank after they foreclose on it. There were a lot of people who suffered financially during that crash, and they were upside down on their mortgages. They owed more than what the value of the property was showing to be. And they couldn't make their house payments, and they went into default. And in California, that doesn't get posted until you're 90 days in default. And then you have 90 days to cure it. In Texas or Arizona, you have 30 days to get current, or they could foreclose on your house. Here, they don't even post it until you're 90 days delinquent, and then you have 90 days to cure it. So we had a lot of people going into default and trying to sell their homes before the bank foreclosed, which was a short sale because they're selling it for short of what they owe on their mortgage. And then sometimes they weren't able to do that for many different reasons. And then the bank would foreclose. It didn't sell at auction, so the bank took it back. And then it became real estate owned and REO by the bank. Mm-hmm. And then the bank brought it to market at its appraised value. So it didn't sell for less than what the mortgage was, and the bank was trying to recoup their money on it. So a lot of people who were more fortunate during that time were able to get a refinance or a loan modification, actually, or a forbearance, where they qualified enough financially to take the 6 or 4 or 5 months that they were past due and tag that on to either the end of their loan, or they got a forbearance or a loan modification so that their payments were reduced $500 or $600 a month. And for some people in that time, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough of a reduction for them to be able to get current and make their house payments. But for a good number of people, it was enough. Those loans are now resetting. It's at the 4 and 5, 6 year mark. They're resetting, and so they're going back to their original amount. And in a lot of cases, their financial situation has not changed, and we're seeing notices of default show up. And this time, they may not have to do a short sale because they probably have a good deal of equity, and they may have multiple offers on their house. So it's a difference to me, right?
So that's kind of an accelerator in the sense that these people are really motivated sellers.
Yes. And a lot of times they have their heads in the sand because You know, they think they're going to be able to borrow the money, or they're really trying to work with the bank to get another loan mod. But when you apply for that sort of thing, it's like refinancing. You have to qualify financially, and if you're behind on your payments, you probably can't. So it's our job just to – sometimes they don't have to sell their home. You know, sometimes there's lease-back situations. Our job is not to go in and scare them into a fire sale. My job is to let them know what their options are, because they may not need to sell. They may be able to get a renter in there at a very strong rental rate, and they can downsize their lifestyle for a little while and then be able to cover their mortgage, or they, you know, there's a lot of different options that they have. It's just important for them to know that this time around they probably have equity and can leave with a little bit of cash and not have to do the short sale. Go ahead, Jackie.
Oh, no, I was going to say the other thing was there was a 4 or 5 year period there after 2008 where even highly qualified people couldn't refinance because the banks weren't lending money.
Right.
I mean, we had plenty of friends that were trying to refinance, and they were fully qualified, and they still couldn't do it.
Right. Right. And that all happened because of that nightmare with the loans, right? There's a lot of homeowners who just got bad loans. They shouldn't have gotten the loans that they got and didn't realize that they were maybe sometimes adjustable rate. There were a million things going on that it wasn't the homeowner's fault. And so then there were very strict restrictions put on the lending institutions and on underwriting, and it did prohibit a lot of qualified borrowers from being able to get the loans. You're absolutely right. That has lessened a little bit, not a lot. I did see an email the other day that I haven't replied to yet. I'm curious, that came from some source. It's not a lender that I know, that said that they have stated loans available. And stated loans means you just have to tell them what your income is and they believe you, right? You just have to state what your income is, and that's what got everybody. I know. And we see a lot of that in the commercial world, because people that buy apartment buildings don't want to disclose what all of their assets are, but they have financial statements and things that they can prove without having to pull a credit report. So there's definitely a change going on, and it hasn't really gelled completely so that we know what it is yet, right? We know that.
You know, it scares me because, you know, back in, 2005, before that, late 1990s and the early 2000s, I remember, you know, every time we got in the car and turned on the radio, there was a commercial for get a loan, 125% of the value of your home,
right?
And, you know, no money down. And I would look at my husband and say, how can they do this? This is going to blow up. I remember that. We had so many conversations about that. And then
it
happened, and as you said, regulations were put in place, things tightened up. But I am starting to see now similar commercials and ads.
Yes.
Similar, not as wild as they used to be. But a lot of specifics, like specialties, like veterans can get a loan 100% of the value of their home. Veterans, you know, through certain – but I'm starting to see a little bit of that. So after all these regulations were put in place, are people getting around them again?
It seems that way. As I said, it hasn't all really gelled yet for us to really understand, you know, where is that money coming from and what is the interest on that money and what is the – you know, what are the penalties? I worked with a young lady several years ago who was having to sell a home that she and her ex-husband built in North Redondo, and it was listed for $1.2 million, and she was in a short sale situation, and it was a devastating and very emotional experience for her. And she was vested as a school teacher, but she still couldn't afford those payments, and her ex-husband was not able to support them financially. Some things had happened in his life that he wasn't able to help. And she finally, even though she wanted to proceed with the short sale so that she and her daughter could have less stress and downsize into something more comfortable for her financially, she was able during that time to again, it's about the level of customer service you provide. You can't put the sign in the yard and publicly be selling the house if you're going to refinance and get a loan mod. They won't do it. So we waited for her to see if she was going to get accepted and do her loan modification, and that happened. And it was able to reduce her house payment by, I think, about $600 a month. And so then it was still stressful for her, but we were able to then bring the house to market and sell it. And she didn't understand when she worked with her lender, and they didn't tell her that that is like a refinancing, and you sign all new papers and all new documents and all of that, and that there's a prepayment penalty. And so when she sold her home, it ended up that it wasn't exactly going to be a short sale. There was about $120,000 in equity, and half of that was going to be distributed to the ex-husband. And then they each ended up with, I think, around $18,000 or $20,000 because of the prepayment penalty when they sold the home and had to pay off that loan mod.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I know. There's just a lot of different things that people don't know. And you know, back to what you were saying, Joe, about that level of customer service, that's the real reason to have a trusted realtor in your pocket that is about more than just getting your home sold, that can really let you know what your options are and what the obstacles are to look for and explain those things. Because I don't know how to fly a plane, and I don't know how to do brain surgery, right? I lean on the experts for that. And that's what a real professional does. They're there as a consultant, and they're there to hold your hand, and they're not there to press you into anything. So, and I loved what you were saying about Lou's Place and Primo with the pep talk, because we do that every day too. I'm excited to hear about that. And then people in our office hear us doing it, and it's now turned into a whole new coaching business for us. So it's that level of customer service that is delivered that we're very, very proud of, and I'm excited to see other businesses rallying around that and getting people enthused about the customer experience. It just makes my heart happy, because that's what we're here to deliver to.
What does my man, Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins, say? Success leaves clues. And great organizations all have a certain characteristic about them. They have a team mentality. It isn't I, it's we, and us. And that's very important.
It is, and that just makes me so happy to be able to deliver that. You know, it's like MichelleBrownCoaching.com, we're able to deliver that message, because we get to what the source of what causes more success and or more or less success in business and in relationships and stuff. And I have a unique opportunity to take all of my coaches that have helped us build on that and bring success to the agents that work with us on our team, and our coaches have agreed to sit in during our masterclass that we do on MichelleBrownCoaching.com. And so it's not just me they're listening to, it's the coaches that we take direction from have agreed to donate their time to our friends and clients and things that come to Michelle Brown Coaching. So I am so excited about that. That and our expansion into the El Segundo office too, because we are all about the customer experience. And people laugh at me, people that know the area. We just went to a conference in Las Vegas, our convention, and talked to agents from all over the world and tell them that, you know, if they have home buyers that they're selling their home and they're moving to Los Angeles, to please have them contact us for an exceptional customer experience, and we'll help them find their home. But those who know L.A. and know that we have an office in Torrance and one in Redondo Beach and one in Newport Beach, and then find out that we're expanding into the KW office in El Segundo at the Point, are like, well, that's 8 miles away. I understand Newport Beach. I get Newport Beach and I get San Diego, right? But El Segundo? And I said, you don't understand. That's a whole different niche market, you know? And 8 to 10 miles away in Los Angeles is 45 minutes to an hour, depending on what time of day you try to do that. So we needed to be closer to our friends and our clients that are Manhattan Beach, El Segundo, Hawthorne, Playa Vista, the West Side. So we're excited about that expansion up there. And Jackie, I wanted to tell you about April. There is an event going on at the Point, April the 27th. We have a special Mother's Day event that we're hosting with food and champagne, and we're partnering with the generosity of Kendra Scott. The ladies that work at Kendra Scott Jewelry are awesome, and we're hosting it there with them, and they are providing some mystery gifts and makeovers from another tenant in the Point. So we'll all be there April the 27th from 6 to 8 at the Point at Kendra Scott and out on the lawn around the food court there. And the special one-time discounts that night that Kendra Scott's offering, proceeds from the sale of that are going to Walk with Sally. So, Kendra Scott and the other tenants at the Point that participate in it are going to donate their proceeds to that. Walk with Sally will be the hosted charity, and that's April 27th at 6. So please be there.
Okay. All right. I'm sure their PR team is going to send me that press release the minute they hear the show.
I'm sure they will. They are on their game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I want to highlight realestateprofessionalsinternational.com, realestateprofessionalsinternational. Is there another website that you'd like to highlight, Michelle?
MichelleBrownCoaching.com.
MichelleBrownCoaching.com. Okay. And also, I just want to do a real quick station break, and I want to transition into some questions about topics that many, many people will recognize. But right now, we want to say welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show. You're listening to us and a masterclass on real estate with Michelle Brown, Keller Williams, South Bay. And it's like having one of the best real estate professionals in the country in your living room. You can ask her any question, literally, if you're listening live. We'd love to have you. Give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. But I have to say, Michelle, one of the things that people talk about now, and you've alluded to it a little bit, there are lots of flexibilities potentially if you're selling your home and you're maybe having trouble with the payments, your loan is adjusting, maybe you can get a renter in, or maybe you can Airbnb your home. Can you talk a little bit about that, short-term rentals and how that's affected the market?
I can talk a little bit about that because it's a short story. You can't do it, and I'm not taking a position on that, right? Because we have clients on both sides of that fence, and I am empathetic and sympathetic and understand both sides. So the next door neighbors don't want to live in a hotel. They don't want to live in a transient community where every week there's a new neighbor moving in next door. And people who own homes, and sometimes they're not investors that are deliberately wanting to do, the short-term rentals with VRBO or Airbnb. And there's a bigger issue with those two companies as well that I'll touch on. But the property owner, and basically what realtors stand for and what we will be going to Sacramento the first week in May to march on the Capitol and meet with our elected officials and speak with them about pending legislation that adversely affects property rights, right? So that's what we stand for, is a homeowner's property rights and their right to do what they see fit within what is the peaceful enjoyment of everybody in the neighborhood, and that they're not disruptive with crime or anything. But we stand for property rights, and some owners of homes leave. They have a year, maybe they have deployment, or maybe they have a year of management training in another country or on the east coast of this country, and they wanted to rent their house out. And if they had proximity to our destinations, to the beaches and the entertainment and the piers and all of that, then they had substantial return on their investment if they could do short-term rentals. And so typically they would either put their home with a management company that understood how to work a short-term rental. And by short-term, I mean less than 30 days. Usually they're a week or 2 weeks. And or they would do it themselves on an Airbnb or an or VRBO website. And what is a home fully furnished, a fully furnished three-bedroom home within three or four blocks of the beach in any of the beach cities, some obviously higher than others, but the average is say that the monthly rent is $6,500. Manhattan Beach, it could be $25,000. But they were getting that for a week because it was vacation rentals and it was less expensive than a hotel and people could prepare their own meals and just have the luxury of some privacy. I have a client like that myself, and they live in Paris half of the year and they're here half of the year. So the half of the year that they're in Paris, they were doing the short-term rentals, and they don't understand that I can't get $6,500 a week for their home anymore. That it's someone that's going to be renting month to month or 6 months or a year or longer. 62% of the people that live in the South Bay are renters because they can't afford to buy here, or they have homes elsewhere and they're here temporarily on jobs and choose not to buy here, or they can't find something to buy here. And so it's been a frustrating in our relationship with them to explain that, because for 2 or 3 years they've been able to do that and now they can't anymore. So,
you know, it's interesting because, and I know I've mentioned this before, Joe, but we owned a home in Mammoth for 15 years and it was in a part of town where you weren't allowed to rent it out to short-term rentals. They were not allowed. And we knew that going in. You know, as Michelle said, less than 30 days. I mean, if you own the home and somebody moved in for 6 months or a year, that was fine. But you were not allowed to rent it out for anything less than 30 days. And we knew that going in. On the other hand, there are lots of places, like the Outer Banks in the Carolinas, where we vacation with my family, where these homes are second, third homes, and they are built to rent out. You know, they're designed, and you are allowed to rent them out on a daily or a weekly basis, and you know that going in. It's so much harder when – now, the numbers I heard recently, somebody – I read someplace where there were like 153, 156 houses on the Strand in Hermosa, Manhattan, and a full third of them are not primary residences. You know, they're a second or a third or an investment property or something.
Right.
And a lot of people have owned these homes for years. Some locals that live there, grew up there, maybe they live someplace else and they're renting them out now. And for the municipalities to just go and change the laws on them, you know, just it's a tough spot to be in, because
it is.
A lot of people depend on their income dependent on those rents.
Yes, it's true.
Wow.
At the same time, it's all about the quality of the person who
right.
is living there, and that's hard to manage when you don't have some guidelines in place and you're not effectively, you know, screening and qualifying people. I just had a situation that I had to deal with on a property that we manage for a client, and there was a renter there. She's been there probably 2 years. And she fell in love and wanted to try out her relationship in Hawaii and moved and sublet, which is against her lease, sublet to a friend of hers. And this property is near the beach. And the friend and we didn't know that the friend was there until like the second month. The rent was being paid on time, and we drive by and check on the property, and my assistant kept seeing a different car there, and so we were calling her to say, if you have a roommate, we need to get applications and things and make sure that your roommate's qualified to live there as well. And we were going through that process trying to track down our renter and serve her notice that we suspect she's in violation of her lease, but the new roommate got this brainstorm to do Airbnb on the weekends, right? So now we have a third party in there. Yeah. And we had our arms around it immediately, but the neighbors were having cars towed because they realized what was going on, and they know us because we're in the neighborhood all the time and called us, and they're like, they're blocking our driveway and they're parking where they're not supposed to park, and because it was, there was four on the lot there, it was, you know, townhomes, and so they were having cars towed.
Oh my God.
And the people that rented it for the weekend didn't know any different, right? It was one of those kind of Craigslist scam things, but they had paid $3,000 to be there for 4 days, and their rental car was towed, or their personal car that they drove in was towed. And it took us a couple of weeks to get our arms around it and get everybody out of there and get back to calm. But that's, you know, that's the bad side of the situation. And then there's the good side of the situation where you have quality people that obey the rules and don't disturb others. So it's kind of a little bit of a mess right now.
Well, there you go. Oh my gosh, that was quite a tale. Because
welcome to my world, Joe.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think we've covered that subject. What do you see, Michelle? We've talked about a lot of things, and we've got a few minutes left. What do you see on the horizon now that maybe non-professionals don't see? What are some of the coming issues and or trends in real estate that you're looking forward to over the next couple years?
I think the biggest
this
thing is going
to be. This segment of the South Bay Show is brought to you.
Sorry. Go on.
I think the biggest thing is technology, and we're fortunate enough to be. Keller Williams just invested $41 million in our technology and our ability to manage our business and manage our clients and to the level that we can, you know, secure their lifestyles and deliver a high customer experience, because there are smart homes, there are smart keys. The future, as we've been advised to see it through Stefan Swainpool, is that someone sitting with a laptop in their living room through the virtual tours and the drones and all of the videos that we're doing, the movie trailers that we're doing now on our homes, can actually tour a home, go back through to the living room and walk upstairs again. It's not just a slideshow. They can actually walk themselves through the property and send it to mom in Cincinnati and you know, to dad in Canada, and everybody can look at the property. And through that website, that buyer can make an appointment to see the home, and once they identify themselves with whatever criteria is going to be recommended, driver's license number, social security number, they are given electronic key digit to go to the home and press five buttons on a electronic door opener and go in and see the home themselves. And
I just saw that on Shark Tank.
Did you? Really?
Yeah, we saw a newer version. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw it about 6 months ago at a conference, and you know, and as professionals, you know, we have concerns about that. I mean, it looks slick and it's great for a buyer. However, and it would only work on a vacant home, right? You don't want a stranger walking through. And that's what we do. That's the customer experience that we deliver, is we let our clients know that you need to get your prescription dugs and passports and jewelry and Mont Blanc pins out of the home or into a safety deposit box and not in your home safe, because those things are very easy to break into. So my concern with that, even on a vacant property, is the age-old trip and fall lawsuit, right? There's no one there to witness who came into your home, and if they locked it and left it secure when they left, and did they fall or bump their head on the shower or something while they were in there? So, but the good part of the technology is that we are able to deliver those kinds of things, which, in my mind, with my clients, is a much better way to sell your property, because you have fewer open houses, you don't have as much traffic through your home, you don't have the disruption of your lifestyle, you get more exposure to more people in more places, so you get more offers for your property, and that's the good side of all of that, as long as it's well managed. And so that's the level of education, you know, that we're bringing to our agents right now, is to make sure that we're able to deliver all the advantages of that to our clients, and then diminish the negative impact if there is any, or where we see there might be.
It's good. It's called good old fashioned boots on the ground. That's what it is. Boots
you're
on
right.
the ground, and we gotta go. We gotta go. Show show is
Michelle
down.
Brown with one L. Michelle Brown coaching.com.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much,
you
Michelle, for joining us today. It's awesome to have you. Every time we have you, we learn new things, and it's just, it's an amazing show. I think lots of people are going to get a lot out of this. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. See you April at the Point.
See you April at the Point.
Right.
And, of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.